InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Weight loss drugs are important obesity-fighting tools, but for some users, the results may be far from a cure due to side effects or a lack of results. InfoTrack reporter Jim Anthony has the details. Jim?
Thanks, Chris. My guest today is Amy Donnellan, a journalist for Reuters and author of the book Off the Scales, The Inside Story of Ozempic and the Race to Cure Obesity. Your book traces decades of research leading up to Ozempic's development. As a journalist, and you cover the pharmaceutical industry, what originally drew you to this story, and at what point did you realize, hey, this is more than a pharmaceutical breakthrough, this is a cultural turning point?
Well, it's funny because Ozempic was actually bubbling away in the surface for quite some time before even I, as a journalist covering pharmaceuticals, really realized just how important it was. And I think it was back in the pandemic when a lot of people were doing things they probably shouldn't have been doing. They were smoking a lot, drinking a lot. And I was tasked with writing an article about basically these virus vices is what we called them. And so we were looking at all the sales tracking up in all of these different stocks, like tobacco companies and alcohol companies. And my boss said to me, like, what's the upshot of this? Like, what happens if everyone's really living like an unhealthy life? And so we thought, diabetes. So we looked to what was, at the time, the big diabetes stock was Novo Nordisk, which makes Ozempic. And their share price was absolutely accelerating. And that was when I sort of realized, oh, this really important diabetes drug is going to do well. And then I would say it was 2023 when Novo Nordisk put out a research paper. They basically said that if you were on these drugs, you were a lot less likely to go on dialysis. So a lot of people who go on dialysis have either diabetes or are obese. And the share price of the company that makes dialysis kits went down by billions of euro. And so I thought, oh my God, these are actually going to change the world because these are going to affect so many different industries.
And Ozempic has been called that potential cure for obesity. But based on your reporting and research, how close do you believe we really are to that?
I mean, I think these are really important drugs in the fight against obesity. I don't think they are the absolute cure because I think when you really kind of dig into the data, you can see that they don't work, first of all, for everybody. There's about 10% of people they don't actually make any difference to at all. Nothing happens. They have no side effects. They don't lose any weight. And then, unfortunately, we see about 50% of people who go on these medications, whether that's Ozempic, which Novo Nordisk make, or Eli Lilly's Mounjaro, which is another diabetes medication which helps you lose weight. People come off them after about a year, about 50% of people come off them. And that's for a variety of reasons, but the main one seems to be side effects. So they have some pretty nasty gastric side effects. So vomiting, nausea, people are really kind of put off by food. And these people who unfortunately go on these drugs love food. Food is a real passion for a lot of these people. So it's sort of a miserable existence to be so put off by food.
And I think too, perhaps, you know, just the societal influence when we look at Ozempic, people take it, they may think it's a wonder drug or some sort of magic wand, and sort of the self-accountability gets pushed to the wayside. I'm going to allow the medicine to do this for me after years of trying painfully maybe to lose weight or get in shape and things like that. I sense that too from society as a whole, that if they take a medicine like this, they think all their problems are gone.
I would take a little bit of a different view to that. I think maybe I probably would have thought that before I wrote the book and before I really spoke to the people who live with obesity for a very long time. It really typically starts in childhood. There's a number of case studies in the book where really it starts around 7 or 8 that they realize that they're in a big body and that society does not look on that well. And then they're put on diets very quickly after that. Their parents also not wanting their children to be unhealthy, but also understanding that weight has a real stigma to it, want their children to be a healthy weight, want them to be slimmer. So it kind of sets up this quite nasty cycle of crash diets. And that's one of the things I really learned writing this book was that if you think that these people that go on these drugs don't have willpower, if you think that they are weak in some way, you should really talk to them because many have gone on every diet you could ever imagine. And they have lost dozens of pounds of weight. And I think about that even myself. Like, imagine losing 30 pounds. Imagine losing 50 pounds. Imagine the willpower it takes for that. But then what happens is when they're dieting, and this is something that I really kind of talk about in the book, the sort of the origins of obesity, why so many people are overweight today. really dates back to the Ice Age and how our bodies have evolved to really retain fat, that it actually is a really good thing if food isn't plentiful, that your body is able to hold on to fat when there isn't a lot of food. But we now live in a society where most people have an abundant amount of food, and it's just this perfect cocktail for obesity, unfortunately.
I brought up that question because it's interesting. In the book, you talk about this shift within the last 15 years or so in the ad industry. You know, there was a shift away from ads featuring these wafer-thin models to showcasing real or natural beauty. You know, the curves, the plus-size figures and the like. Yet here's the irony, if I understand correctly. You write, and I'm quoting here, "Ozempic put the body positivity movement into a coma. Despite over a decade of discussion about celebrating different shapes and body sizes, it was clear that if given the chance, millions of people would opt to be thinner than embrace the form they were in." And I found that to be a very, very powerful small part of a paragraph, but it really, really was powerful and influential, I think.
Well, thank you very much. A lot has been written about Ozempic and these drugs, but the thing that I really wanted to explore was just that idea of what these drugs do to society. What happens if all of a sudden it becomes so important again to be thin? And I think that even, you know, I have a daughter, that the kind of thoughts of that, because I do think we had gotten to a place, I grew up in the 90s where heroin chic and there was lots of jokes about fat people. And I think that we did get to a point kind of starting with those Dove commercials in the early 2000s that companies were really shamed if they didn't embrace an idea that actually many different body forms was good. It was healthy for society to allow people to be who they were. And I don't think that was being pro-obesity. I think that this is just, you know, think about a family. There's so many different shapes and sizes. Not everyone had to be the same size. But I do think, yes, I think Ozempic kind of crashed into that, we'll say, body positivity love-in, and has now, yeah, allowed a lot of people who really wanted to be thin to become that way. And I think that we also have to think about that these drugs really cost quite a lot of money, even still, even though the price is coming down. So again, what that does for society in terms of there's a different socioeconomic profile that can afford these drugs. And unfortunately, poorer people tend to be affected by obesity more so than their wealthy counterparts. So there is that as well.
There's a chapter in the book titled The Antidote, which I found quite powerful. You provide firsthand accounts from early users. That chapter just adds a deeply human dimension to the whole Ozempic story, or if, you know, people were on Wegovy or Mounjaro. And you kind of alluded to this a little earlier, but was there a particular story or moment from these interviews that stayed with you long after the reporting ended? I read the story about Emily.
Well, yeah, I think Emily was definitely, it was a hard conversation to listen to. I spoke to Emily quite a few times. I think her story, for the people who don't know, it was basically she was experiencing an awful lot of side effects while on these drugs. But at the same time, they were allowing her to lose weight in a way that she had never really experienced before. And I have spoken to many endocrinologists who've said that actually people who are living with obesity are more likely to tolerate these very extreme side effects because they are so desperate to lose weight and to be healthier, sort of more overall. The one that actually a number of people talk to me about is Sarah. Sarah opens the book. She was, again, one of the early people I spoke to, but she actually had a very positive experience on the drugs. She didn't suffer very badly from side effects. But at the same time, it was really this mirror that was held up to society when she went on these drugs, that she realized that her father, people she worked with, people now started listening to all of her stories, engaging with her in such a profound way that she had never experienced before. And it was all after she lost 70 pounds. And when I did speak to her about that, she said that she just found that so depressing, that all of her ideas were the same. She was the same. But for some reason now, she was now worth their time. And I think that that was very powerful. And I have to say, she was in tears telling the story sometimes. And I would be quite emotionally affected listening to many of the people I spoke to.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, as we wrap up here, you uncover the largely overlooked contributions of a real rock star, Svetlana Moksov. I hope I'm pronouncing her last name correctly.
Moksov, I think, yes.
A biochemist who discovered the gut hormone GLP that, you know, was so pivotal to the creation of drugs like Ozempic. And she, working in a very male-dominated scientific industry, had to really fight for the recognition she so richly deserved and continues to do so to this day.
Absolutely. I think her story is very early on in the book, and it really does, again, it sort of opens up an idea into what the scientific world is like for these kind of breakthrough discoveries, how much you have to fight to prove that you are, you know, I think her story is quite extreme just in terms of how much she had to fight over and over again to prove that she was actually, you know, a patent holder. She wasn't just somebody who was involved in research. She really was actually pivotal in the creation of these drugs at a very, very early stage. And hers is, I think, a very fascinating story that she very kindly allowed me to tell in the book.
Amy Donnellan is my guest. She is a journalist and author of the book Off the Scales, The Inside Story of Ozempic and the Race to Cure Obesity. We just scratched the surface in the amount of time we had, but it's an excellent read. Congratulations on the book, Amy, and I wish you great success with it.
Thank you so much.
And I'm Jim Anthony for InfoTrack.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.